Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, hopping into our next interview, Jen and I are so excited because we're bringing on a family practice doctor, Dr. Shani Muhammad, who actually works for SteadyMD, which is an online platform that both Jen and I get our primary care through. So Dr. Shani, I know that so many of you are going to resonate as she talks through a lot of the frustrations that the average person might experience when they're going to their primary care appointments or just in the primary care system in general right now. And then she's going to talk into how SteadyMD as a platform can help alleviate a lot of those stresses by having access to communicate with your doctor whenever you want, message them whenever you want, set up appointments, as many appointments as you want. So it's really a system that helps you have access and have a good relationship with your doctor. I know while you're listening, some of you might want to do this. If you go to steadymd.com/docgenfit, you can actually take this amazing quiz they have set up that kind of pairs you with three potential doctors in their system. It's free of charge. You just answer a few questions about yourself. steadymd.com/docgenfit to find your match, which is super fun because it's somebody who's going to have similar interest to you and be able to relate to you different when it comes to your care. I mean, after we talk through all of that, Dr. Shani even shares a little bit about her own journey in her own health and how she has had to be a real active participant in going to multiple professionals to really figure out what's going on. So stay tuned, go find your match on SteadyMD, but listen in. I know you guys are going to find a lot of great tidbits in this episode. Dr. Shani, we're so excited to have you on to be able to kind of talk to this perspective of being a doctor primarily through an online platform. But first of all, thanks so much for spending your time with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, your whole journey and everything is really exciting. I'm excited to get into it and everything. But first of all, what really inspired you to even want to be a physician? I believe this might be the first time we've ever had a physician on the show. So I'm super excited to even dive into that.
Yeah. So probably when I was about 13 or so, my mom took me to see an adolescent physician. So that's a physician who's trained as a pediatrician most times. And then they do extra training in taking care of teenagers and adolescents up to usually around age 21. And that was really great. They're not necessarily easy to find everywhere. So I was really lucky. And it just felt like a place I could be comfortable and be myself, someone who understood what specific things were going on with me in my life during that transitional time. When you go in the waiting room, there's no babies or, you know, toddlers like you're going to see in a typical pediatrician's office. And so it just felt like a space for me. And we had such a great relationship. And she really helped me through, you know, a difficult period in my life, which teenage years can be, or preteen years can be for a lot of people, of course. And I felt like I wanted to do that for somebody. I wanted to be that for somebody. So that was my first inkling of considering going into medicine. And then later down the road, when I was pregnant with my own daughter, my first child, I thought maybe I wanted to be a midwife because I loved, you know, my own pregnancy experience. And I thought how great it would be to be able to participate in that all the time and get to deliver babies. And I specifically remember the nurse who was in the room with me during labor and delivery. And she said, oh no, you need to be a doctor, go to medical school, which was kind of funny. And so, you know, then in college, I just, you know, got hooked up with the right support people and, in a group that was specifically designed for people from underrepresented backgrounds who were interested in science and healthcare to help support them with extra study groups and, you know, tutoring sessions so that we could be successful. And so then I was in this environment of a bunch of people who, you know, like me, were trying to get into medical school or become researchers or scientists. And so, and it wasn't competitive at all. It was really collaborative. So from that point, it was solidified and I felt really supported in my journey at that point.
Wow.
That's so awesome. And I love, so you sent over a little blurb and kind of just to let us get to know you. And there was one line in there that stuck with me when you talked about how you like to help people optimize health. And it had to do with, you know, forming creative partnerships rather than authoritative dynamics in that relationship as a physician with a patient. And I think that's so important when it comes to the therapeutic alliance. And you can you kind of speak to where you learned that importance and why that's so, you know, vital to your practice?
Well, it always made sense to me. And I was fortunate enough to have that kind of care growing up, you know, even with my adolescent medicine physician, you know, I'm a child, right? But she still talked to me like somebody who had agency and somebody who had opinions and desires and thoughts about what she wanted for herself. And so, she, you know, I don't remember all of the details of our interactions at this point in my life, of course, but I just know that I felt listened to and supported and not talked at. Mm. And so that felt like, well, I want that and I want to do that for people. And my medical school, I went to Case Western in Cleveland, Ohio, and I chose them because in addition to something very unique, like having only half day classes, most medical schools are 8 to 5, or at least they used to be. I'm not sure how things operate now, but this class was 8 to 12 every day. And then you had the afternoon sometimes for electives, but a lot of times just free to study. So that was unique. But the other big unique thing that they did was early patient interaction. So we started interacting with patients from our first year of med school, whereas, you know, back then, med schools were not allowing medical students to really get patient interaction until their third year when they started doing clinical rotations. But we got it from the beginning. And so we were constantly having seminars and lectures and videotaped sessions of ourselves interacting with patients. And then we'd have to watch it and see. And so we just got a lot of education on how to form collaborative relationships, on how to talk to somebody about making change. And so it was like kind of indoctrinated into me from how I learned medical school. And then when I started in practice, I was working in underserved clinics in rural California, and then also eventually in an inner city underserved clinic. And, you know, what I realized is that, you know, people are living their lives a certain way for a reason. Maybe it's because they want to, maybe it's because they don't know better, maybe it's because it's all they can afford. But the point is, you've got to find out that reason before you start trying to ask them to make changes. And it's so simple to just be like, oh, do this, do that. But if somebody, you tell somebody to exercise and they don't have a safe place to exercise outdoors, they can't just take a walk because there is no sidewalks or there's no parks nearby, or they've got childcare issues, or they're working 3 jobs already and it's hard enough just for them to get to the doctor's appointment, or they're depressed and it's just a big, you know, it's a big win for them to get out of bed in the morning, whatever it is. If you overlook that, then you've done nothing for them, but just tell them something that you haven't given them any sense of how they can accomplish it. You've not achieved any barriers. And that's when you start seeing things in patients' charts that say stuff like non-compliant, as if the patient just doesn't want to follow through. When most people do want to follow through, they don't want to not feel good. People want to feel good. It's just that there are barriers. And sometimes those barriers are financial. Sometimes they're just life circumstances. And sometimes they are, you know, mental. We all have those things where we know we should do better, but we just don't, you know, but we want to do better, but we keep falling into those traps. But there are ways to help people, but you've got to first find out what's going on with them. And that's the first step in collaboration. So for me, it's like, if you want to be successful in your patient doctor relationship, you've got to really get to an understanding and then work collaboratively. Otherwise, you know, I mean, it doesn't work for toddlers and it doesn't work for adults to just be authoritative all the time.
Oh my goodness, that was such a beautiful way that you put it. I mean, that's the same, you know, within physical therapy too. People like to say, oh, they just didn't do their exercises. And it's like, well, do they actually even understand what they're doing or how it would affect them or when they can put it into their day and how that's going to affect their change? You know, and it's exactly like you said, building this relationship within, rather than just expecting people to do what you say and not having any understanding of who they are as a person or the environment that they're in, is just so, so vital. And I think that's a different approach than you sometimes hear, especially for physicians. A lot of the times it's, you know, one person after another. I myself haven't had the best relationships with physicians, especially primary care. And I feel like our system sometimes is set up to avoid those long conversations or not have time to really get to know a person. How have you kind of avoided that within the system?
I mean, you're absolutely right. And I always tell my patients this because a lot of patients will come to me and, you know, they've got insurance. They may even have an assigned primary care physician and they're not seeing them anymore or they've never seen them. And they have this a similar, you know, complaint or story is that they're not feeling like they were listened to. And, you know, the person never seemed to have time for them. And just like in any profession, absolutely, there are some people who are really not that great at establishing rapport and having good bedside manner and just being personable, right? Everybody isn't great at that. Just because you're smart and you can pass tests doesn't mean that you're great at that. And that's why we have different types of doctors who do different things, and they're not all necessarily required to have a great face-to-face conversation, right? So sometimes there's that for sure. And I won't pretend like everybody is, you know, great and wonderful and it's just the system. But a lot of it is the system too, for primary care especially, because most of us go into primary care because we want to establish relationships with people. We want to have a long-term impact. You know, primary care can be on the lower end of the pay spectrum. So people tend to really feel like passionate about it, at least going in, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to work in, like I said, first rural health system and then an inner city clinic system. So when I graduated from medical school, I had a scholarship that paid for my medical school for the entire 4 years through the National Health Service Corps. That scholarship requires you to give back 4 years in an underserved area, and they score the areas based on how high the need is. So, and then every year the score that's required for people varies. So my year that I came out, the score was pretty high. So I had to work somewhere fairly remote or fairly underserved in order to qualify for my loan repayment. So that's how I ended up in a town I had never heard of. And I was born and raised in California, but it was a great experience because there really wasn't anybody else out there. So I got to do a lot and I got to mean a lot to this small community of people. But I've also worked in a large healthcare system, you know, multi-specialty large healthcare system that is all around California and some other states as well. And they offer great pay and great benefits and all of these things, but not a lot of flexibility. You know, it's you know, corporate medicine, and I don't get to choose if I think, you know, Mr. Smith needs a longer appointment. You know, I had that flexibility when I was working in the federally qualified health centers and the rural health centers a little bit, because they were a little bit, you know, smaller and they're not such large organizations. And you have the flexibility to say, hey, you know, Mr. Smith is, you know, he's just older and he has more problems. We need to see him for a double slot. But I couldn't do that at my large health organization. I got what I got, which was 20 minutes for follow-ups and 40 minutes for new patients, which sounds like, okay, that's not so bad. But when you consider that, that includes the time spent in the waiting room, that includes the time spent getting checked in by the medical assistant, and then I get my time with you. So by the time I'm coming into the room in a 20-minute appointment, we might get 15 minutes, probably more like 10. And that's if I want to stay on time, right? And not make the next person wait, and the next person wait, and the next person wait, and then my family wait for me to get home. And, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm really big on running on time. I feel like I respect your time because most people have to take off work or do something to get to the doctor's office. It's not like, oh yeah, just pop in. You know, you have to carve out some time in your day for that. So I respect your time. I respect my time. I show up on time and I want to leave on time, but that requires everybody to work in concert. And what are you going to do if in that 10 minutes you have with somebody, they reveal, you know, you're there to take care of their blood pressure, but then they start tearing up and it turns out they're depressed. And I want to address that because I want to be sensitive to that. And it's important because if your depression is keeping you from being able to, you know, eat healthier or exercise or take your medicine, then your blood pressure is not going to get better either. But I'm running out of time now. So I have to choose between being late for the next patient, running behind for the rest of my day, or being a caring and empathetic provider. And that's an unfortunate situation that I think a lot of primary care doctors find themselves in multiple times a day, every day. And so even when they're trying to be empathetic and have a good listening ear, they may always seem rushed because they are rushed. They don't have the time they need. And that's what I really like about working for SETI MD is I always have the time that I need. Now, I learned in medical school about, you know, asking open-ended questions, and, you know, and people are afraid of that because, again, of that time limit. And am I going to, they're going to talk too long. If I ask them an open-ended question, they're never going to stop talking. But, you know, I find that if you do ask an open-ended question, people don't talk as long as you think they're going to. So, and it sometimes that just helps let someone feel heard and get it out. And then you can kind of take a little bit more control of the conversation and direct things better. But you know, when there's a, it's a fear of it. I don't want to run behind. No, I'm already limited. I got to get going. I got to take care of this. I got to check these boxes for the insurance company or for my organization because I get rated on if I've done X, Y, and Z. And so there can be a lot of pressure. So I'm really glad that I don't have that pressure now working with SteadyMD because our new patient visits are an hour and follow-ups with my patients are 30 minutes. And then they can have as many as they want, as often as they want. And then they can also text me or message me as much as they need to. So a lot of times we don't even need to do a follow-up face-to-face on, you know, Zoom visit. We can just have an ongoing back and forth conversation. So I think people feel a lot of relief just from that, just from knowing there's no rush. You've got all the time you need. And I never book back-to-back appointments. So even if we go over a little bit, it's still okay. I'm not running behind.
That's huge.
That's so much that I want to dig into there. And so many things that I think in my world of PT that I kind of, as you were going through different scenarios, yeah. I was like thrust back into like PTSD of working in the hospital and having 27 patients, 17 of which were outpatient, 3 of which were on the inpatient floor, 6 of which were in the long-term, you know, care facility. And then you're there for 4 hours afterwards trying to figure out all the paperwork and so many different barriers that you kind of pointed out in your conversation with, or in your answer right there about like, within the patient visit, the time we have, all of the big, humongous topics that you as a primary care physician are responsible for in consulting with this person about, and you have like 10 to 15 minutes with them on average. And just with all of those challenges, what do you say to the average person when they are looking at that primary care visit and they're like, okay, I have this one day on the schedule and they're going and they're in this type of a system right now. How would you tell them to prep themselves to be best prepared for that appointment?
Right. So I would say to understand that you may not be able to get all of your issues addressed in one visit, and that is okay. And to expect that so that you don't leave disappointed. It depends on how many issues you have and how big they are, right? If they're like little things, oh, I have this rash, I need a cream. Can you check my ear real quick? And, you know, and I think I have a urinary tract infection. Okay, those are really quick things that can be addressed. But if it's like, oh, you know, I'm crying every day and I want help losing weight and, oh, you know, my heart has been fluttering. These are things that really require workup. And it's like, oh, gosh, which one to tackle first? And then add on to that, if you have other chronic medical problems that your doctor probably feels is important, right? Like if you have diabetes or high blood pressure or, you know, any other medical problem that they feel like that was the reason they scheduled you in, right? Check up on your regular health conditions, then they're going to be really focused on that. So I highly recommend making a list of the things that you want to talk about and prioritizing that list in terms of most priority down to the bottom so that if you can only get one or two, which is likely, you'll get the most important ones dealt with right away. And then make an appointment for your next appointment, you know, for a next follow-up before you leave. It's always easier to do that. And if you know ahead of time that you've got multiple issues that you're going to want help with, when you make your initial appointment, make the next one too, just if you need to. Go ahead and, because sometimes by the time you get to the office, they're going to be booked out for several weeks. So when you're scheduling that appointment, say, okay, great. I've got an appointment for 2 weeks from now. Can I go ahead and get another appointment for a week later? And likely they may have that opening now, but by the time you show up to the office, it's, you know, 2 weeks into the future and they're now booking 2 or 3 weeks out again. So if you don't want to wait that long, you can come back in a week or every week if you need to. Sometimes I did that with my patients who I felt were really sick, especially when I was working in the underserved clinic, and it was right about the time that Obamacare passed and people who previously had no insurance and had just kind of been bouncing back and forth from the, you know, crisis to life, meaning ER visit and then back out, ER visit back out. And suddenly they had me as their doctor. So they came to me with, you know, 10 years worth of like problems that no one was really addressing. And so I just scheduled those people for like weekly visits. Cause like, there's no way we're going to handle this in one or two visits. So we just need to see you every week for the next 6 weeks so that we can try to start, you know, getting a hold of this stuff. So make your appointments in advance. make several in advance on the phone if you think you've got multiple issues, because there's a good chance they won't all get to be addressed. But make the list, prioritize the list. If your doctor utilizes an electronic form of communication, take advantage of that. So if they have an email, or, you know, that you can message them, you can, they can do a lot through email. If they have it attached to the electronic health record, you know, like a MyChart or something, enroll in that. If you aren't enrolled, take advantage. It's a great way to communicate with your doctor. Some things don't need a visit, right? Like if you just need labs ordered, or you're having some concerning symptoms, they can do the workup by ordering the labs ahead of time, so that by the time you see them, it's a more high yield visit because they've got some more information. So, you know, your doctor doesn't need an email about random symptoms that came and went and you feel fine now. Like, they don't need to have a, you know, moment to moment update of everything that's happened to you since the last time you saw them. So you don't want to overburden with, you know, unnecessary information, but absolutely use it for things that might be able to kind of get the ball rolling faster so that your visit can be more high yield. So those are the things that I would recommend. Priority list, scheduling multiple appointments at a time so that you can come back sooner, and then utilizing the electronic communication system if they have it.
I think that's huge, and giving people permission to be like, okay, it's okay. You don't have to just do one a year. You know, if you want to do more, if you want to continue to talk to someone and see someone, and you're able to, book it. But, you know, it is still hard. Sometimes you want to get in and it's like a few weeks, or it's already booked out for so long. And I know I definitely have been in that situation as well. When did you make the decision to go from working, you know, in the typical system to now working virtually for StudyMD? Like, when did you decide, okay, I've done this kind of care and I want a little bit more time and opportunity with my clients?
So I had been doing telemedicine for 4 or 5 years before I started with SteadyMD, part-time on the side in an urgent care type of fashion. So it wasn't, you know, primary care. I didn't assume a relationship with people. It was kind of like a call in, you've got an issue, I'll deal with it right then and there, and then we move on. So I was already very familiar and comfortable with the concept of treating people, you know, remotely and through video. And even when I worked for that large healthcare organization, and I would, you know, venture to say that most doctors, even if they don't work for a large healthcare organization, already do some version of telehealth, you know, whether it's directly doing Zoom visits, which is probably new for a lot of people now because of the pandemic. But most doctors have had to call their patient about something, even if it wasn't a scheduled, you know, quote unquote phone visit. They usually call with, you know, concerning results or checking up on people, and all that stuff in the past had been unreimbursed because, you know, that's how it went. Now this has changed with the pandemic, but most doctors do some kind of synchronous or asynchronous telehealth, meaning they get a lab value, they see the, you know, they see it, they call the patient, have a visit, have a chat with them right there about what they want them to do about it. Let them know, hey, I've sent a prescription for you. That's synchronous. It's happening real time. Or asynchronous, you know, maybe they order something for the patient, they tell their medical assistant to call or send a letter, that happens. They get the result back a couple of days later or a week later, they send results, they communicate, but not in real time. You know, but that's something that's not new. So we've been doing that. So I was familiar with that and comfortable with video visits. And when I left the large organization for multiple reasons, that many of which had to do with feeling like I had a complete lack of control over my own time and schedule, no autonomy to decide how I wanted to practice. It was what this organization's rules were, and that was it, down to the medicines I chose and everything. They had a system, and that's what it was. And I wasn't on any committee that got to make any decisions. So I felt like, well, why do I have this degree if somebody's just, I don't get to do any medical decision making and use my brain? I just have to follow a formula. Kind of feel like a robot could do that, you know? And so, you know, I was unhappy there and I left. And for a while I continued to do the kind of urgent care telemedicine visits on a part-time basis. And I worked in some urgent cares on a part-time basis as needed as a contractor. And I was really set on not signing another contract and taking on another full-time position until I found something that would give me what I wanted, which was time and flexibility and autonomy. And I think that a big source of unhappiness for people in healthcare is a lack of autonomy and a lack of, you know, don't have any say over our schedule, just constantly getting asked to do more and feeling underappreciated for all of that. And I was not willing to do that anymore. And then I think I may have seen an ad for City MD on Instagram or something. I don't even remember, but I reached out to them and ended up talking with our CEO, and you know, and then the rest is history. I was like, this is a great idea. I'm already comfortable with this, and I get all this time with people, and I get to choose my schedule. Like, what's bad about this? It sounds great. So, I flew out to St. Louis, and I already had several licenses in a few different states because I do some work in the world of healthcare management as well, and that requires some other licenses. So that was already a good start for me to be able to see patients in multiple states. But then I flew out there, and we did all the paperwork and fingerprinting and everything that's involved in getting more state licenses. And then once everything was up and running, I started. So, and I've been happy ever since.
It's interesting because, again, from the provider's perspective, hearing your kind of journey through the different settings that you worked in, it honestly reflects a lot of young providers in a lot of different fields right now. I mean, physical therapy is just close to us. And I know a lot of people in the world of physical therapy who they're like, man, this isn't what I thought it would be. And exactly what you said, you feel like you're now treating by algorithm, and you're given this sheet, and that's what you need to do if these certain symptoms or signs or numbers come up. And a lot of people, I think, typically like to call it burnout, but there was a viral YouTube video a few years ago that called it moral injury. And no, people just learn a skill set and learn the ability to help people, and then they're put in a structure that kind of shackles us into doing things a certain way.
Right.
And I think it's so liberating as a provider once you finally find that structure you can work out of that gives you that ability to treat people and impact people's lives the way you actually thought you were going to when you initially
as
a young
student. Wrote that personal statement. Exactly.
Yeah. Stepped into that school to go to med school. Like, you're like, wow, I can finally do this the way I want. So now I want you to dive into the bones of like SteadyMD. And I mean, as a primary care provider, you are tackling these huge issues. And you said, again, in this statement you sent us, that you'd like to approach things with a lifestyle change approach first rather than, you know, if when appropriate. Again, how do you feel like Steady helps you approach these larger topics from a lifestyle approach with your patients?
Yeah. So one of the big ways is that there are no metrics, which, you know, most physicians are and any healthcare provider is probably familiar with, because you get graded on if you've done, you know, if you've checked these boxes, and sometimes the boxes don't even make sense.
What was your productivity for the day?
Right. Or like, I remember there was a metric that had to do with giving an after visit summary to the patients. And that was like, you'd have to, if you printed it, you know, then it kind of checked a box in the EHR to show that you had given an after visit summary. Well, I mentioned the inner city health clinic that I worked in. My patients were all Hmong. Most of them didn't speak English. Mm-hmm. Many of them did not read even in Hmong. So, because I could get the thing, right, copy it into Google Translate and put in Hmong, and then it would, you know, put out Hmong, and then I could paste it back into the thing and print it. And I can hand it to them and be like, oh, checked that box, but they can't read it. Like, what is the value in this? You know, like, how is this helpful except that I checked a box? What are you proving to anybody here? Was I a better doctor because I gave them something they cannot read or understand? Like, but I'm getting graded on that. So it's a waste of time, right? It's a waste of time. It's a waste of paper. You know, it's just a waste. So things like that don't actually make sense, or getting graded on your patient's hemoglobin A1C, a measure of how well their diabetes is controlled. Okay, well, I'm doing all I can, right? I'm counseling on the lifestyle changes, counseling on nutrition, referring if they want, you know, prescribing the medication. If somebody just eats what they want to eat, if they're not ready to make those changes, if they, you know, if they have food insecurity, I can't tackle all of these problems in a 15-minute visit. So I'm probably not going to make a huge impact on their diabetes control in that one number. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get dinged for it. Like, I didn't try. Like, but maybe we worked on something else that was really meaningful. Maybe I got them to take their medicine, or maybe I got them to stop drinking soda. Like, maybe that's all I can do this visit or the next for the next 6 months. And that's a win though, but you don't get credit for that. So, you know, I don't have to do any of that with SteadyMD. I can just focus on actually like taking care of the patient in a practical way and making practical changes that's going to be wins for them and not what somebody else has determined is a win. So that's the huge thing. So that frees me to really be collaborative with my patient and not be focused on, okay, did I check these boxes? And then, as I mentioned, my new patient visits, which are the majority of my actual video visits, are an hour. I always tell my patients when I'm introducing them, I say, we have an hour. So please feel free to be as complete in your answers as you like. But also, sometimes people finish in 30 minutes, and that's okay too. So don't feel pressured to fill the hour. You don't have to talk for the whole hour. But if you talk for an hour and 10 minutes, that's okay too. So I think just giving people permission to like, just relax. We're going to have a conversation. I warn them, I'm going to introduce myself briefly, and then we're going to be talking a lot about you, probably way more than you've ever done at a doctor's appointment. So, because it's awkward for people and they feel like, oh, okay. And they'll jump right ahead to the next section. And I'm like, no, come back. Let's tell me more about how you grew up. And they're like, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah. Tell me about your parents. You know, where did you live? Did you play any sports in high school, or were you in the band, or, you know, did you have any hobbies? And, you know, it's like, I really want to know. I tell them, I want you to tell me your life story, and I want you to start from where you were born, who you grew up with. You know, did you have any events in your childhood that are significant or you think shaped you as a person for who you are today? And sometimes that's, you know, a parent's divorce, and sometimes that's the loss of somebody, or sometimes it's a really good thing or a scary thing happened. I want to know, because that may inform, you know, the kinds of decisions you make today. Tell me about your siblings if you have any. Are you guys still in contact? Are you close? Are you isolated right now from family? Who do you live with now? Who are your support people? What do you do for work? If you work outside the home, what do you do for fun outside of COVID? Now, I always qualify that now because people kind of laugh like, I don't do anything now. But like, what did you do before COVID when you would just want to have fun on the weekend or unwind, you know? And so it's like, that's something that people are not used to answering at a doctor's visit. So sometimes people like just jump right ahead and they're like, okay, so for medicines, I take these. And I'm like, nope, come back. Tell me more. So, you know, that's nice, because I find out like a lot of things about people that I would never have found out in my prior practice. And a lot of times I can find something that we connect on, like we both have a Peloton, or we both CrossFit, or we both have a child with ADHD, you know, or we both homeschooled, or, you know, just one lady like had so many similarities. And I was like, oh my God, this is so funny, you know, but she felt like, you know, that made her feel a little bit more comfortable and understood. So that's why I want to know, because I'm looking for ways that we can connect and might be even a better fit than you thought. And I'm looking for ways to understand you so that I can, you know, I can advise and offer solutions that fit with who you are as a person. We don't even get into your medical history, your family history, for usually at least a good 10, 15 minutes into the visit, because we're spending all that time telling me your story. And sometimes people have so much to their story that the past medical history and all that stuff becomes check boxes at the end. Like, all right, real quick, you know, like, but mostly we're talking about like what's going on with them and how, and then I always ask them, how did you come to SETI-MD? Like, how did you find us? What were you looking for? Was there something that made you unhappy with your care before? And some people have stories from upsetting incidents or just feeling like they didn't have time for them. I have some patients that live between multiple states and they just want to be able to have a constant care provider no matter where they are. And since I'm licensed in multiple states, I can do that for people. I even have one patient that has moved to the Cayman Islands. I can't even legally prescribe her anything anymore, but she wants me to stay her doctor just for advice, because we've established a trusting relationship. And so that if she sees someone out there and they tell her something, then she always lets me know, hey, this is what they said. What do you think? Or what should I ask when I go in? You know, so it's really so much more than just, I have problem X, will you prescribe, you know, pill Y? You know, it's like, there's a lot more to it. And I, you know, I ask my patients if they have health goals that they are trying to accomplish or personal goals, and if they want my help or if they just want me to know about it. And I ask what level of support they want, right? Like, do you want me to check in with you regularly and help you develop a plan? Or do you just want me to cheer you on? Or you want me to mind my business until you ask, you know? So I think that gives people permission to ask for help or to say, I don't need help, and everything in between.
I mean, that is like primary care as it should be. It's truly like unbelievable. I hope people are listening to this. Like, I never get to talk to my doctor like this. And that was my experience as well. When I got on with my primary care doctor, SETI-MD, I had a 45-minute conversation that felt like so comfortable. She almost felt like a friend after, who really knew me, who knew my goals, who was on the journey with me, no matter what that was. And like you said, having someone who understands what you're going through and is living their own health journey. And I think sometimes you go to primary care doctors that you feel like, I don't feel like I could trust anything that you're going to tell me because I'm not sure you're taking care of yourself.
Right.
You know, and having a doctor, you know, I can't speak to all of them. I know that you have done a lot for your own health, and my SteadyMD doc has as well. But it just was that other layer of confirmation, of trust, of like, this is exactly where I want to be if I'm coming to someone with my health stuff. And it's not just about medicine, but it's the whole picture. And so I truly myself appreciated that. I love how you approach it. And I hope that people are really hearing this thinking, oh my gosh, it could feel so different. And I think that is what's most empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's okay, you know, for all of us to be human, right? It's okay if your doctor is still working on something that you're working on, but there's honesty and vulnerability, I think, that it takes to not just be like standing up above being like, oh, you need to lose weight, or you need to get your blood pressure under control, or you need to, and it's like, okay, well, what about you? You know, yeah. And like, you know, you can come with a little, you know, less judgment in your tone, even if you're not trying to be judgmental, but you don't realize how it's being received. And collaboration just takes so much of the edge off of things. And it's like, we're in this together. You know, I tell my patients who want help with weight loss or eating, even if it's eating not to lose, but just to optimize, I invite all my patients to share my Fitness Pal with me. Like, my Fitness Pal is my food diary is visible to anybody who follows me. So I tell my patients, this is my Fitness Pal. You're free to follow me on there if you use it. You can see exactly what I eat. You can see that I ate 4 Oreo thins, you know, I eat them almost every day, but they're 140 calories and I know that they fit. But, you know, I also tell them I don't track most of my leafy green vegetables. So don't think that I don't eat them. I just don't track them, but they're there, you know. But again, if you want to get ideas, if you just want to know that, like, look, I blew it last week big time. I just totally melted down, and you can watch it all unfold on my Fitness Pal, you know, because I'm human and, you know, I understand. I'm not just gonna be like, oh, it's no problem. Just eat less, move more. Like, it's not that simple, of course. And I get it because I've been there, you know? And so I try to just like, be open and share and be honest about the process. And just because something worked for me doesn't mean it'll work for you. I can only speak to what worked for me and then what I know from science and what science tells us. And then we just trial and error it together, you know, and make adjustments when needed.
Beautiful. That's amazing.
One thing that I want to talk into is the process of how Steady pairs, you know, people with their potential docs, because I think it results in a lot of this, where it's like it results in a lot of this collaboration, because it's just like, oh, this is in my experience, this and this, and you have this expertise, because it's like online speed dating for doctors. It's amazing. You take this little quiz and it pairs you with the potential 3 doctors that have a lot of expertise in your areas, that have a lot of the same interests that you might have interest in, that, like you said, you bring up CrossFit and all these other things. Like, when I took my quiz, I got paired up with 3 doctors, 2 men and a woman, they all had like their rap sheet of everything they're interested in, their like hobbies. Like, and I think that's so cool, because it allows you to pair up with someone that you really think that you're going to have a chance at rapport with before your first appointment even.
Yeah, I think it's a great tool. So they have, as you mentioned, this matching tool where you can ask, you know, answer some questions about yourself and what, you know, what your style is and what you're looking for. And then, you know, if there's any specific hobbies you're into or types of eating that you like, then, you know, based on those things, you get matched with, you know, a couple of different physicians to choose from. And then you can look at our profiles. We usually have a few pictures of ourselves in different areas of our lives and a little kind of brief intro about ourselves so that people can choose that way, you know, or you can just look at everybody's profile and choose as well. So you don't have to do the quiz route if you don't want to. Generally, I find that it is pretty good at matching. I always tell my patients, the whole benefit of this program, this system, is that you have a doctor that really understands you and that you really understand and are comfortable with. And if that is not me, that is okay. Like, I will not be offended or hurt. Please do not feel bad about switching doctors if you need to. You know, it's not going to offend me. No one's going to come after you and ask why. It'll be okay. So, you know, I give people permission to like to say, you know, love the service, but didn't feel the connection. You know, health is very personal. And I want a doctor that I feel comfortable with. So I want my patients to feel comfortable with me. And if they don't, then we're not going to have a great relationship. They're not going to trust my advice. And I'm going to have a tougher time trying to help them. And I'm going to feel frustrated, right? Like I'm not making a difference for this person. So, you know, in that respect, I that's part of my kind of closing comments after the first visit. I inform them, remind them of the amount of time they have to decide if the service at all is right for them before they are like kind of into the contract. And then also remind them that if you love the service and the idea, but maybe just, you know, didn't think I was a great fit, you can switch. And that can happen at any time. 6 months down the road, a year down the road, you can switch. I have had patients switch from me. I have had patients switch to me. And it's not because somebody else was such a bad doctor. It's just they thought it might be a good fit. And then it turned out that they needed something a little bit different. And that's okay. So I think that's the other beauty of it. Like, we don't make it hard to switch at all. It's not a big thing. And we all really just want our patients to have a good connection with us.
I love the way that you put that. That's so beautifully stated, because it's not about a, you know, right or wrong or who's a good physician or bad. It's just who you connect with and making sure that that is going to support you through your journey, you know? And I think that's right. It's so incredibly important. And based on where you are in life, do you see a lot of clients that work through, that are working through menopause, that are in perimenopause? Like, are you helping a lot of people in that state as well right now?
Absolutely. I really am. And it's funny because, you know, I mentioned in my email intro that I was, you know, I kind of recently started dealing with that myself. But in truth, it hasn't been that recent. It's been more like 2 years, but it really kind of took that long for me to figure out what the heck was going on. Because, you know, I'm 42. So, you know, the average age of menopause is 50 to 51. Perimenopause, the time leading up to it, which is really the more problematic time, because menopause is really when it just all stops. But leading up to it, it's really a kind of a horrible parade that nobody asked to be a part of, right? And it can be, some women feel fine. They don't really notice any difference at all. But some women can experience symptoms that range from, you know, irregularity of their periods, hot flashes, emotional, like, you know, changes with mood changes, mood swings. And it's not just, you know, being crazy or angry. It's, you know, really feeling just not like yourself, sometimes depressed, sad for no reason, or, you know, finding yourself being more irritable and angry. You may have body composition changes where your eating hasn't changed, your workouts haven't changed, but maybe you just don't feel as energetic and you're feeling a little soft now, like, and especially centrally around the belly area. Like you might shift where your body stores fat, and you might have felt like your muscles had more tone before. You can start feeling very soft, and it can be very perplexing. Like, what the heck? I'm doing everything I've been doing. Nothing's changed. And then as a result, women cut their diet even further and, okay, I got to cut out carbs and, or I have to eat less. And it's like, cause they think something must be wrong, and they're maybe I'm doing something wrong. So they, you know, go even further, which just really upsets the balance even more. And this started happening to me with, you know, menstrual irregularities a couple years ago. And, you know, did all the work up with my own doctor. And then I try really hard not to doctor myself, because I want someone objective. So I made sure to find somebody I trusted so I wouldn't have to, you know, doctor myself. And, you know, did the work up, and we decided that, okay, that's, you know, this is just probably things that are changing as you get closer to, you know, as you get older in age, things change. Okay. But then this year, it's like, well, I guess we're in a new year, but in the last 12 months, I'll say, I noticed exactly the energy problems. I've always had some insomnia, but it just seemed like it got so much worse. And I know I've never been a big sweater. Even when I've worked out, I've always been jealous of the people that are like dripping in sweat. And I'm just like red, looking like, you know, I just didn't exert myself, and they're like covered in pools of sweat. So I've never been a sweater, but so I don't do like, you know, hot flashes with sweating and anything. And I don't have hot flashes, but I just started noticing, gosh, I am really hot in this bed, but I love covers. I can't sleep without covers. That feels crazy. I need something like on top of me. So now I've got the fan on and then a cover on. And my husband's like, why is the fan on? You know, it's cold. And I'm like, but I need to be in the covers. So I'm hot. And, you know, it's like all messed up. Right. So, you know, and I'm, you know, things are becoming more hormonally irregular. So I feel like I'm in like constant PMS, and just my mood is off. My hunger is high. I'm fighting, trying to like, I feel like I had just built all this muscle, and all of a sudden I just look soft to myself, and I'm frustrated. And I have a nutrition coach, and you know, and I feel like, is he getting me right now? Like, I'm doing everything right and I'm frustrated. And he put me on a scale break because I was getting so mad at the scale, you know? And so it was just a whole nightmare. And then, I finally like reached out in one of my Facebook physician groups of women, and one of them in there was an OBGYN, and she said, we can do a visit right now. So she gave me a Zoom visit. We talked and she's like, yeah, I think this is just perimenopause and you're just hormone cycling way too often and it's causing you all these symptoms. And so, you know, we worked on what was right for me. And I also supplemented that with some of my own reading and, you know, added some things into my life, like some supplements and some tart cherry juice before bedtime, because it helps, kind of has a melatonin effect. And I got some molecule sheets that are cooling, because I'm like, okay, I need to not be like dying of heat stroke in my bed. And I and made some adjustments. Like, I used to work out fasting. It just was really hard for me to have food in my stomach when I worked out. But, you know, on some reading, it's like, you know, some women who work out really intensely need to have something. It doesn't need to be a whole meal. So I started just having a little bit, like a little applesauce pouch, and then having protein within 30 minutes of my workout, because I had read that that doesn't really matter, you know, for anybody, unless you're, you know, really high performance athlete. But then I did some other reading that was really specific to women's physiology and suggested that, you know, we can't go off of the research that was out there for men. And we have to look at how we are different physiologically, how we metabolize differently, how we, you know, how our hormones affect things, and that we quickly start losing muscle after an intense workout. And so I was like, okay, let me, you know, what can it hurt, right? It's not going to harm me to do something I would have done anyway, but just do it, you know, an hour earlier. So I started drinking my protein shake right after my lifting sessions. And I've noticed a dramatic change. Like, I don't feel soft and flabby anymore. I don't feel all like mentally, you know, off anymore. And, you know, I still get a little hot at night, but the sheets are helping. So, you know, I accepted, okay, yeah, this is happening. I don't know what age it happens to other people, but it's happening to me now. And I cannot do this. I can't live in crazy or increasing crazy in my own head for the next, you know, 8 years, you know, waiting for the blessing of menopause. So, you know, I've got to take control of this, because my fitness and my health is really important to me. I really enjoy being good and getting better at my activities. You know, I'm not going to be in anybody's CrossFit games anytime soon, or, you know, or be on a podium at a USA Olympic weightlifting competition. But I enjoy improving myself and seeing myself get better. And I was feeling like I was losing that. And that's a big part of things for me. And I know that I have many female patients who speak to me about just feeling like their life is not theirs anymore. Their mind is not theirs, and things are just off, and they don't know why. And they're trying all of these things out of desperation, different diets and smoothies and cleanses, and they don't know what to do. And my own, you know, process of self-discovery has just helped me to have another view. And it's just a little bit more tools in my arsenal, you know, and it's not to say that a male physician couldn't help them. Absolutely. He could, because, you know, I had to do the research and I had to read up. So can they. So you don't have to have a thing to be able to help somebody with a thing, right? Like, you know, oncologists don't have to have cancer to take care of cancer patients. You can read and learn, you know, but some people do find a lot of value in having somebody who understands, because they've been there, and who's open to the idea that everything isn't well studied. So we don't have strong evidence for everything. But if it's not going to harm you and it might help you, then okay, let's try it. You know, so I have patients who will say, you know, I read about this supplement. What do you think? You know, and I say, okay, I haven't heard of that one. Let me look it up and I'll get back to you. And we're communicating this all through the, you know, the secure chat platform. So we didn't have to have a visit for it, but we could communicate quickly. And then I look it up and do some reading and make sure I have a good understanding. And I make sure it's not toxic in any way, not going to harm them in any way, not going to interact with their meds. And I say, well, this is what the evidence shows. And usually it's not much, because the research on supplements and nutrition and fitness, especially in women, is limited and lacking, but it doesn't show that it will be harmful. So let's give it a try. And that's kind of my like open approach to things, is let's give it a try. If it's not going to hurt you, you know, and you want to try it, then let's give it a try. You know, I don't want people to spend a lot of money on something that has low benefit. So I do warn them, okay, well, it looks pretty expensive. There's not shown to be any benefit. So, you know, maybe we can try this less expensive option. But if you don't mind spending your money and you want to try it out, but, you know, I'm not promoting anything, especially not any high cost supplements or, you know, teas and cleanses. I'm not promoting any of those things, but I'm very willing to say, let's give it a try if I can find that it's not going to be harmful.
I think there's so much. I love that we kind of came around and ended with a little bit of your own story and your own journey. And for some reason, it's like revolutionary for people when they hear a doctor who's like super intelligent and super good at like helping other people with their care and their lifestyle behaviors, hear their own story and like, oh, wow, doctors go through normal things, too. And they have to get doctors and maybe look for a second one. Like you said, you had to go to another person to kind of get more consultation. And just like you said earlier, there's no shame in saying, hey, can I talk to another person and have another set of eyes on this and see if they have any ideas? But it just adds into this whole experience for you to then turn around and be able to impact people more.
I want to know, you know, how does someone then go into finding a doctor because they feel so hopeless? Like for a lot of the symptoms that you were feeling and feeling like I'm doing all the right things. Like I hear this all the time, right? I'm eating what I'm supposed to. I'm trying all these diets. I'm doing all the workouts. And I'm still feeling, whether it's fatigue or hot flashes, like at night, like you were feeling, like, how does someone start to approach their primary care doctor? Or how does someone start to approach getting help for these things that feel unknown?
I think it's really, in the same way that I gave my patients permission to talk as long as they need to, I think it's important to give people permission to say, I don't know, or to not know. And by that, I mean, you can approach your doctor, your care provider, and let them know that you are not feeling like yourself. You don't know what is wrong, but you do know that there is something different. And this is what you're experiencing. Do they have any experience with this? Or can they recommend the right specialist that you should see? Mm-hmm. So it gives them permission off the bat to be like, yeah, you know, right? This is really not my area, but it sounds like you should see, you know, an OBGYN, or you should see a rheumatologist, or you should see whatever. It gives them permission to not know it all. None of us do. No doctors know it all. Even people in the same field refer to each other all the time, you know? So, I have a group text with two of my girlfriends who are in the same practice as I am, family medicine. And one of them said something so silly the other day, like, you know, talking about, I'm going to get an MRI on my back because blah, 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 blah. And we laughed. And she's like, don't laugh at me. And I'm like, okay, that sounds ridiculous, you know, but we all have moments where we're just a patient, right? Yes. And then that's why I don't doctor myself, because when I'm hearing my own symptoms, I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, I'm like, so, you know, give permission to your doctor or, you know, provider, if you're seeing a nurse practitioner or PA, give permission to them to not know and to just help you find someone who does, you know? Yeah. And, you know, and different problems have different types of specialists. You know, hormone, quote unquote, problems are covered by endocrinologists when it's related to your endocrine glands, like your thyroid or your parathyroid, things like that. Or, you know, for children, like growth hormone. But when it comes to like female hormones, estrogen and progesterone, you know, that may be more, you know, appropriate for an OBGYN or a reproductive health specialist. Or there are some physicians, they can be internal medicine, adult doctors, or family medicine doctors who've done special training, who have a fellowship training in women's health. And they also may be better equipped than, you know, your average, especially internists who tend to do a lot less women's health. And some family medicine doctors do, even though family medicine doctors are trained to take care of women and babies and even pregnant women and do deliveries. But if we don't continue to do that after residency, you know, we all kind of grow with our patient population. And if you haven't made a point to keep seeing kids, then you tend to lose the moms and the women too. So then you can, your practice can become older and more male, or, and then you don't deal with some of these kind of life transitional issues as much, or, you know, things like that. So like some family doctors don't feel as comfortable seeing kids because they just haven't seen them in a while. It's mm-hmm. not because they didn't initially have the knowledge, but it's been a while. So I say all that to say that everybody doesn't know everything anymore, because by virtue of just how things go over time, we all kind of carve a little niche for ourselves. And so, you know, if you need to see somebody else, it's okay. And you just give your doctor that permission to help you find the right person to take care of your problem. And if you're feeling like they're not listening, then absolutely find another person, you know, that may not be a good fit for you. Maybe they're just too busy. Maybe they don't have great bedside manner. Maybe they don't, you know, they don't vibe with you. And that's okay too. Sometimes, you know, we're doctors are people too. Maybe they don't feel the connection, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's your health matters. And so whatever you have to do to get the care you need, if that means moving on, then it's okay. You move on, you know.
So much power in collaboration. And that's another thing that I think the study platform lends itself so well to, is the ability to collaborate with different professionals and communicate and solve so many of those issues. So speaking to everyone who's listening, if you haven't already, you know, we'll have a link in the show notes for you to click to go take your quiz, see who you match with. That doesn't cost you anything. And Dr. Shani, thank you again so much for being here, taking the time to kind of talk us through your own story, what you do through SteadyMD. Where can people find out more about you, match with you? Are you taking on new patients, or just find out more about SteadyMD?
Yeah. So going to the SteadyMD website, you can look me up that way, or you can go directly to, I think it's SteadyMD/Shani, or is it?
Okay. Yeah. Yes. And whatever that is, we'll have that all linked up.
Yeah. If you type in SteadyMD/Shani, then you'll see mine pop up. Like the top four search bars is all my link to my page on SteadyMD. And then you can sign up with me there. I've got like several pictures of myself with me with my daughter hiking, a couple of my pictures that show my weight loss transformation. So yeah, and then you can read about me more there and has all my information. And there's a link to get started with me. I am taking new patients. So yeah, if you go to my page and what I've said here today or what you read on my site, you know, kind of connects with you, then I'd be happy to have you as a patient.
That's amazing. Thank you so much again, just for your knowledge, your time. It's always so inspiring to hear how physicians or teachers, educators in medicine have continued their journey in order to continue to learn and give back and provide rather than, you know, getting lost and feeling hopeless and being able to provide for people. So thank you for what you do and your continued work in it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.